Hello, and welcome to the Real Life Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer McKee. I'm so excited to have you join me each week as we explore a variety of topics around life in the greater Palm Springs area. From real estate market updates to lifestyle topics, interesting people, food and entertainment, we keep it authentic and fun. Please be sure to like, subscribe, and follow Jennifer McKee Realtor on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to keep up to date on everything happening in the Coachella Valley. Also, be sure to go to Apple Podcasts and like and leave a review for this show. I really appreciate it. And now, without further ado, let's go to this week's show.
Hello, thank you so much for joining us again this week. It's another week of quarantine. The weeks are blurring together. I'm not even sure how many days we've been doing this.
Is it three now?
Three weeks, you think?
I don't know.
Maybe. Every day feels like we're living Groundhog's Day. But there's a lot of positives too, so I'm not complaining.
I have my coffee from Ensenada with the Starbucks, thinking cup of Mexico and travel.
Drinking it, sipping it right now. It when I'm feeling like I'm being cooped up too much, I grab the Cabo coffee cup and imagine I'm sitting on a beach in Cabo. It's my happy place. But we have we've been hanging in there, and really, I've been getting a lot done, a lot accomplished, and spending a lot of family time, which isn't a bad thing. And had to just figure out life in a different way, like many of you are doing. One thing that we did recently is my friend turned 50 years old, and I know she had a lot of celebrations and was pretty bummed that she couldn't. I figured she'd be pretty bummed that she couldn't go through with all her plans. So I organized a birthday parade in front of her house, about 20 cars. A lot of people decorated their cars with streamers, and we surprised her by driving by, honking our horns, yelling out happy birthday, holding up signs, telling her we loved her, and it was pretty awesome. Many people actually circled through the neighborhood three times, and we got that on video. It was awesome. It's something that I'm hoping she'll never forget. And if we hadn't had this pandemic and being stuck in our homes, something like this we probably would have never thought of. So we're having to think outside of the box in order to just live life and make memories and still celebrate and be humans.
Yeah, it's amazing. Maybe it's just for us. It does feel like it's because it's only been a few weeks, but people seem to be adjusting pretty quickly. There's sort of this new normal. Now, that doesn't mean that if all of a sudden this thing ends and we're all back to our lives from before this, that we won't just settle back into that groove. But it is funny how quickly, I mean, I'm starting to see people are posting things on Facebook about sign up for my class, about how to thrive in your business during a pandemic. And I mean, people are like quickly creating stuff to sort of capitalize on this particular new way of living and lifestyle change that we're all under, and we're adapting to, you know, new habits and new daily rituals and patterns. I mean, even restaurants are trying to adjust. And so, like, what we would do before when we would go out to eat, now we have this new thing, and you kind of almost sort of forget, like, oh yeah, we used to just go into the store and get something, and now it's like I gotta wear my face mask and I gotta have on gloves just to go to Costco. And
well, I think that people that are thriving during this have figured out how to pivot and not be so confused or feel like their business or their however they were doing life was shut down. If you're really thriving during this, you have figured out how to pivot your business, figured out how to pivot your lifestyle or whatever in order to adapt to
well,
this
didn't,
new normal.
Didn't like TKB, which is a restaurant here in Indio, I think they're number one on Yelp.
In the nation,
yeah. I mean,
the best sandwich you will ever
really,
have
really good
in your life.
Yeah, I mean, they've adapted, and a lot of other restaurants haven't seemed to be able to figure out quite what to do. I mean, it's depending on the type of service you offer and
right,
product you're selling, obviously. But like for those guys, I mean, they're doing like street side.
Yeah, I haven't been, but I think it's my homework, my podcast homework, to have to go check it out for myself. But I was told that they have fully just a big, huge setup outside with tents. Now, the weather here is perfect right now, so that works in their favor. But they have tents set up outside, lines that make sure customers stay someone said it's like 8 feet apart. And you can order online. If you decide to pay in person, you walk up, pay, the person drops off the food and walks away, and then you walk up to pick up the food. So there's really no interaction where you're even close to the cashier or the person who made your food, which is not the case even for grocery stores. That cashier's standing there, you're standing there like 2 feet, 3 feet apart. Well, at TKB has it, I was told, they're doing it really well, really safe, and they're staying busy is what I was told. So I need to go check it out, because their number one sandwich is called the Trump Card, and it literally, I have dreams about it. So I think that may be homework later today.
The fact that you dream about sandwiches pretty much says it all. Yeah, well, and even the church services and stuff have had to adapt. The one that, you know, you're involved in with the music, you guys are doing, you know, video recordings and trying to find ways to have everybody be able to contribute their piece from home without having to obviously go into the church and do anything. So,
yeah, that's been interesting. A big shift, because normally I'm in charge of the music there, and we have a stage and all the instruments and lights and fog machine and everything you could imagine. And it's been definitely, we've had to pivot the way we're and shift in the way we're doing things. So on Sunday morning service, it was my son, who is a great keyboardist and backup singer, helping me as I was singing, and it was just a camera. And for Easter, we're doing a bunch of voices recorded separately in their own homes, where we all kind of splice them together and sing at the same time. Sunday morning, my twin 6-year-olds are in the preschool class at the church, and they've been missing their friends and teachers. So we had a big Zoom class on Sunday morning before church, online church started, and they got to see their teachers and sing songs and hear a Bible story and talk to their friends. And we're just getting really creative and utilizing technology in order to stay connected. I think that in the past, technology has gotten a bad rap about how it's disconnected people, disconnected families. But I'm telling you now, like, my thoughts have shifted a ton, because I'm more connected with people that aren't local than I've ever been. And I hear my boys, whether they're playing whatever video game is popular at the time, I can hear them playing and talking with cousins and friends that are some local, some that are across the country. And so it's just been really neat to be able to connect through technology. It's bringing us together rather than apart.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how all of this is going to play out in terms of creating new habits. I, you know, so many people get... they are status quo focused on keeping things the same. They don't like change. And there's a big part of our population that's like that. So they struggle with new technology or new ways of doing things. I'm really turned off by that kind of sensibility. I really like innovation and adapting and adjusting and trying new things and seeing what's out there in the world. And, you know, I'd love to buy land on Mars and start a real estate development out there. I mean, like, my brain's out in other places than most people. So I'm interested to think, like, okay, what happens in, say, 3 months or 6 months if this keeps going? Why would I want to go back and put myself and my family potentially in danger by sitting in a large auditorium with 200-300 other people, especially if this virus doesn't quite burn itself out here in a short amount of time? Am I more likely to want to just sit and watch from home online? What about buying real estate? Why would I want to go sit and look at, or not sit, why would I want to go walk through 6 or 7 or 8 houses? You just had a blog post about this yesterday, which I thought was really good, but it's like that, why do I want to like expose myself and waste the time? Why don't I just look at, you know, video tours or go online and figure out which house I want and narrow 10 down to 2, and then I can just go look at those 2. But people
really
have spent a lot of
that.
Time, you know, in the past just wasting days doing stuff that they don't need to now.
I agree. There have been times I've shown houses. I spent a full day with people. You look at, I don't know, anywhere from 5 to 10 homes. And honestly, I think 6 is the magic number. People start to get weary of it after 6. So I try not to show more than 6 at a time unless they're really wanting to. Maybe they're on a time crunch of being here for a short while and need to pack their day as full as possible. But because after 6, they all just start to mesh together in your head and you can't remember what you saw. But I've spent hours and hours with people and we'll immediately walk in a house and within 5 seconds, they're like, nope, this isn't the one. Or that we drive in the neighborhood and they're like, oh, no, I don't even want to see the house here. And that was maybe a half hour drive there, a half hour drive back. And I think that the video piece is going to eliminate a lot of wasted time for agents and the clients so that they can narrow it down to the few that are really contenders and then say, okay, now I actually want to see this home. And that's what happened recently. I just did a video tour of a home for a buyer a few days ago, pointed out all the good, all the bad, everything, tried to make it a really great video so they could get a feel of and a sense of really being in the home, talked them through it, and then sent it to them and said, this is something you'd want to see, I'm more than happy to show it to you under the guidelines of the California Association of Realtors, of course. We have guidelines we follow to make it safe and keep our distance and sanitary and all that. And they emailed me back and said, yes, we love the house. We love the photos. We love the video. I want to come see it. So I'm going to schedule an in-person tour. But that just eliminated a lot, a two-hour drive for my client. If they hadn't have liked the home, that would have saved them. So I think it's going to, I think maybe it won't fully, you know, stay total video heavy like it is now. But I think that it's going, our old normal, we're not going to go back to the old normal fully. I think it's going to be a kind of a mashup between the old way and the new way.
Well, and we also just don't know. People get cabin fever and they want to get out of the house. And maybe they're going to be excited to want to go do like real analog like experiences in life and touch and feel and, you know, be around human beings and all that. So, you know, maybe it's going to be more of a return to that kind of a way of doing business and stuff. So yeah, it's, you know, we don't really know.
Yeah, we don't know. And there's different thoughts on, everybody has a different angle of looking at it. I was watching a news program and they were interviewing someone to do in clothing manufacturer or clothing store or some big wig. And they said, well, what do you think clothing is going to do? Do you think that dress clothes will rise or athleisure will rise in the market as far as spending habits go? And he said his answer was interesting because he said, well, there are two takes on that. Some people think, well, definitely athleisure is going to be the way to go because people are at home and they just want to be comfortable. And then he said, but then other people think that people are going to start buying more dress-up clothes because they are feeling so casual all the time and they're needing to look professional from the waist up in their Zoom meetings or whatever. So it's just, there are different angles of looking at the situation depending, you know, what the way your brain thinks. Maybe it will change, maybe it won't, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see. My theory is that it's going to be a mashup of the old normal and the new normal, and we're going to kind of meet in the middle.
Well, and it's fun to try to predict just because, you know, whether you're a creative or an investor or whatever it is, you know, trying to anticipate where trends are going and you want to get on the front end of it. It's fun to kind of predict what that is. But yeah, I mean, it's, none of us have a crystal ball. It's really hard to figure all that out. But
well, it's definitely interesting to see a bunch of agents start doing video. I've been doing video for years. I go in and do video tours and I've sold many homes sight unseen. I've had great success with it. Video's been a huge component of my real estate business. And to see people going, hey, video's the new thing. I'm like, no.
It's
been the new thing. You're just finally being forced to utilize this technology and use it as a tool in your tool belt. Whereas before you weren't forced to do so. So you were like, why not? Why do I need that?
Well, one of the things, you know, you've been very busy. The last few days, we've had a lot of, which has been really exciting, a lot of clients reaching out and things are moving forward. Even though this is like our busy season, it's been really weird because of the quarantine, but people are still doing their homework and they're looking at buying and there's still activity happening. So it's been really productive. And because of that, I wanted to put together, you know, kind of a mortgage finance? Where are we at in the marketplace right now? What's going on? I reached out to Hugh Van Horn, who is a great resource for that. And you've not heard this interview, but I went ahead and called him and got an interview with him that we can play. I'd love to get your thoughts on it and have you listen to what he sort of gives his take on some really interesting things. There's a lot of information flying around right now about the CARE Act and mortgage relief and all of that. And if you're not up to speed, it can be very overwhelming. And he brings some real great clarity to some things if you're looking at refinancing or getting a mortgage. So anyway, I want to play the interview, let you hear it, and then get your thoughts after.
Okay, let's do it.
So Hugh, how are you doing?
I'm holding up, man. I'm holding up. I'm an extrovert, love going out and seeing people, but I'm doing, doing fine. I think calls like this help, and, Zoom's helping, and, trying to do things to stay social and keep in contact with people. So
how are you keeping up on the market and all of the kind of almost seems like daily changes and challenges that are happening?
You know, it's one of those things. It's an uncertain time for lots of reasons. And in the mortgage market, that's definitely true. There's changes happening daily. So, I go into industry news sites. On Friday, actually, I talked to a couple of VPs at big companies, and I talked to some brokers, and I talked to some mortgage bankers like myself, and just trying to keep in contact with other people that I know that are in the industry that are also experts, and make sure that we're all kind of, on the same page and kind of getting the same information.
Are you able to give a kind of a sixth grade, seventh grade sort of overview, not to say that the audience is dumb, but to kind of take a lot of the verbiage and the mortgage conversation that happens at kind of that deep in the weeds sort of level and kind of just simplify it for the most, straightforward, kind of easy to understand explanation of really kind of what's going on and where things are at?
Yeah. So I'll talk specifically on one issue that's affecting our market that probably is of interest to most people, and maybe they don't understand kind of what it really means. So mortgage rates are all over the place right now. In my opinion, they should be in the high twos, low threes for a standard 30-year fixed mortgage, good credit scores, low LTV kind of a loan. But in often cases, I've looked at rates at other competitors and banks. I mean, rates are anywhere from 3.25% to 5%. Well, the 3.25% rates, they won't lock your loan in until you're approved. Well, they're 2 weeks in processing and 2 weeks in underwriting. So they're 4 weeks before they'll even lock in a rate for you. So the rates they're advertising really aren't good because it's going to be whatever it is in that month-long period it takes you to get to that process.
Wow.
Yeah. The higher rate ones are saying, hey, listen, we can't lock you in right now because there's so much uncertainty to hit on your point. So we're going to take your loan application. We're going to process it. We're going to get through underwriting. We're just going to kind of wait to see so we have some certainty so we can lock you in a rate. So what's causing that uncertainty for us is two things. One is because rates are fluctuating so much, when we lock in a loan for somebody, we actually lock in real money with a mortgage-backed security that's funded by big institutions and hedge funds and those sorts of things. Now, when we deliver that loan to them, the rate may change. So we take what's called a hedge, which is like an insurance policy against that lock. So if the rate goes much higher, I can still give you that rate I quoted you and locked you in as the consumer, but we pay an insurance policy to cover the difference of it. Because they're so drastic, those insurance companies have jacked up the cost of those premiums for us, or those hedge funds have jacked up the premiums for us. So it's like it's a very risky to lock. And one of the things that's making it uncertain for us to lock in and do a loan is if I make a loan for somebody and they do what's called a first payment default, meaning they don't make their first payment, I have to buy that loan back, or the originating bank has to buy that loan back. And with this forbearance program going into effect, we're not sure how many people are going to go into forbearance. So if somebody goes into forbearance right after we fund a loan and the government doesn't step in to help pay those mortgage-backed securities that we owe on, that we borrowed them or we got the money from to lend on the loan, then we have to buy the loan back. So people are afraid to make mortgages.
And I was going to say, can you explain when you get a second here a little bit about the forbearance issue and with the challenges with that I don't think a lot of people probably fully appreciate?
Yeah, let me give you an example. So first off, forbearance isn't mortgage forgiveness. It's, a lot of people are saying, hey, listen, I'm going to skip my 3 months payment and I'm going to put it on the end of my loan. And that's what, and the CARE Act has said, that there's no qualification. You can just call your bank right now and they can give you 3 months, no mortgage payments. So the question is, what happens after those 3 months? well, again, there's a lot of uncertainty in what that could look like. As of right now, they're not putting it on the end of the loan. I just saw a forbearance letter from somebody that had a loan with Wells Fargo today, and it says, you know, hey, at the end of 3 months, we'll figure it out. We don't know what we're going to do. But as it is right now, if you miss a mortgage payment, even if they're not reporting it to the bureaus, we as a mortgage company, when we give you a new loan, look at your mortgage history, and we're going to see you didn't make those 3 months payments, whether it's reporting on your credit report or not. So there could be a potential detriment to you getting a loan in the future. In 2008, with all the mortgage relief and people doing loan mods and those sorts of things, you know, we looked at it like a foreclosure. So you were stuck in a lot of cases for 7 years before you can buy another house. And I don't think people are aware of that. So let me give you kind of an example. Let's say mom and dad have a $1,500 a month payment, okay? You call your servicer, they say, hey, you're going to get 6 months off. You don't have to make a mortgage payment, okay? At the end of that mortgage payment, you now owe $9,000, which is 6 months at $1,500, plus the new mortgage payment of $1,500. So you owe $10,500. And you're going to go, whoa, I can't afford that. I've been off of work for 3 months, or I haven't been doing well at my job because of this COVID. That's why I needed this. They're going to say, okay, great. Let's put that over the next 12 months. So you pay us the $1,500 now. We'll put that other $9,000 over 12 months. You think, okay, great. What's my new payment? Well, that's $2,250 a month. So you have a mortgage that you can pay comfortably, that you're comfortable with at $1,500 a month, that now is going to be $2,250 a month for the next year. You know, I don't know if most Americans can really afford that kind of a jump for that period of time. And then you're going to say, okay, well, I'll just refinance it. Well, again, you can't refinance it because, you know, you're late. Now, I understand people have lost their jobs and they can't make their mortgage payments and there's no way to make it work. And I think this forbearance might help them until they come up with a solution, but there's a lot of uncertainty until somebody offers you a new note that you can sign that puts those deferred months on the end of your loan. You know, I wouldn't do it. And even in that case, you have to ask yourself, is it worth skipping those few months payments to potentially not be able to refinance or buy another property for up to 7 years because of doing that loan modification?
Well, and I think we're still up in the air a little bit on when some of these the cash is going to come through from the stimulus package too. I mean, I've heard reports of anywhere from like, you know, a few weeks to 6 months, you know, so if people are kind of waiting on that to help cover their mortgage payments, you know, they could be waiting a long time. And like you're saying, that's just accruing and then they're going to come, that's all of a sudden going to come due and people are going to get really hurt.
Yeah, I think, you hit it again, and this is just the word I'm preaching right now is uncertainty. I mean, there's so much uncertainty that we don't know when the stimulus money is going to come in, how this mortgage relief is going to look, how much money of that mortgage relief is going to go to the servicing lenders and the lenders to help, you know, compensate to do those forbearances and do those, renegotiations of loans. So, you know, there's just so much uncertainty right now. And lawmakers, I feel, are trying to make laws and pass bills as quickly as possible to help people. But there's a lot of, the law of unintended consequences. There's lots of things they're doing that is causing a ripple effect and things they didn't even know about. And, you know, I think and hope as Americans, we've seen this in the past. A lot of what I'm seeing is very reminiscent to 2008 as far as how banks like certainty and they have uncertainty and how they act and things. But I'm hoping that our lawmakers will come up with solutions for this stuff quickly and we'll have a game plan and be able to move forward.
So when you mentioned 2008, I think that for those of us that lived through that, that kind of puts a little shiver up everybody's spine. There are still fundamentals that are different in terms of the strength of the market. The real estate market economy itself is much different situation coming into this crisis than it was in 2008, because that was obviously a bubble. So somebody looking to still buy, maybe they've already got a home somewhere else, they want to buy a piece of property here in the Valley, or maybe it's a new home buyer or whatever. I mean, do you have any advice, tips? Is there anything like, maybe a larger down payment, or there, because of the mortgage rates, are there tricks, tips, things that you're sort of suggesting to folks that they should be doing if they're looking at still wanting to purchase real estate during this time?
Yeah, and this was, it's funny, it's sort of the same advice I would have given in 2008, 2009, 2010, you know, and I think we know a lot of people that lost houses in those time periods, but we also know a lot of people that made a lot of good money and a lot of good buys.
Right, exactly.
I don't think this time we're going to see a huge drop in house prices. The few things that I'm worried about for drop of house prices is, of course, unemployment. But hopefully it's not a long-term unemployment situation. As soon as people are allowed to go back to work, I think they will. So I think although it's drastic and there are huge numbers of the amount of unemployed, I think they will go back to work, which, you know, hopefully will be soon enough that it doesn't affect the real estate market too much. The other negative factor, I think, in our market right now is the amount of second homes that are being used as vacation rentals. I read a report from London, which has been in this COVID lockdown longer than we have, that showed a 42% in long-term rental properties from the month previous due to people that had vacation rentals or VRBOs that they are now converting to long-term rentals to try to afford those payments. Mm-hmm. But again, I think that's a short-term solution until, you know, we get back and people are able to, you know, use those vacation rentals again. So it's a short-term holding on period, and maybe somebody like that, this forbearance thing will help. So I agree that there's not going to be blood in the streets, but I think right now, most people that want to sell their house don't have them on the market, right? Because they don't want people in their house. They want to stay safe. They're waiting for these uncertain times. So I think the houses that you're seeing for sale right now are people that have to buy or have to sell. And if somebody has to sell, they're willing to make a better deal or maybe take a little bit less than they wanted to because they need the cash and they need to get rid of that property. So I think right now is a good time for people to look at buying. And I think especially right now, while people are working from home or maybe have a little bit more time to do things, maybe not binge watch Tigers on TV and maybe, you know, start working on your pre-approval because that could be something that you could be ready to go when you find that right deal and it looks good and you want to pull the trigger, that you're able to pull the trigger much, much quicker and have a lot more certainty in that offer.
That's the thing that, you know, Jen even had a blog post put up yesterday, and that's kind of the conclusion that she's been sort of saying is no one has a crystal ball, but you have to kind of anticipate that at the end of this, let's say it's 3, 4, 5, 6 months, you know, whatever this sort of season, once it kind of gets back to some sort of normalcy, there's going to be a glut of property hitting the market. People are going to be ready to go. They're going to be back out doing things and wanting to look at properties to, you know, houses to purchase, and investors are going to be wanting flipping and all that. So it would seem like now is a great time for somebody to be doing their due diligence, putting their plans together, maybe looking at repairs that need to be done on their houses, getting all of that kind of stuff, to-do list put together, so that when the market does begin to kind of open back up, they can strike, and they can strike hard and fast, because there's going to be a lot of people chomping at the bit with cash. Maybe they've got to refinance. Maybe they pulled some, you know, equity out of that or whatever it is. They're ready to go. They're ready to buy that next piece of property, and they're going to be competing with you. You need to have all your ducks in a row and be ready to strike.
Absolutely. I used this analogy the other day. So speaking of binge watching Netflix, I haven't started the show Ozark, and everybody was talking about how great it was. So I decided to binge watch Ozark. So I won't ruin it. This isn't a spoiler alert or anything, but I'm in season 2, and there's a point in the show where everything's going bad, right? Like, you know, they're going to get murdered by the drug cartel. The FBI is going to arrest them. There's so much uncertainty. And there's an older, kind of wiser character in the show who comes up to the wife, and he says, you know, hey, there's a lot of uncertainty right now. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going on. And you need to stop reacting, and you need to be the reaction. You need to go out and you need to do something. Mm-hmm. And I think that was like such good advice right now. And so this morning I watched that episode last night, and I made a list of the things I can do right now, the things I can do to be proactive and prepare, so I'm not reactionary in the end. Because, you know, something's going to happen at the end of this, and it's going to be really good or it's going to be really bad. We don't know which one, but I think the key is to prepare and to be ready when the time's right. And when you're talking about real estate, I mean, there was a huge downturn in the 20s, obviously. And Will Rogers said, you know, the funny thing about land, they're not making it anymore. And it's so funny that that's such an old statement that still is very applicable today. That even if you bought at the height of the market the last time, your house is worth more than it was back then. Mm-hmm. So if you're buying a home, are you buying something you like and you can afford it? You know, sometimes I think we look at real estate as try to be just an investment, or maybe we justify our purchases that way. But at the end of the day, a home's a home. If it's something you can afford and it's something you like and it's a good deal, you know, I say, why not? You know, the funny thing about land, they're not making it anymore. If you're looking for an investment property and you find the right price, that the right property at a good price that somebody's needing to sell it, and you run the numbers and it cash flows and you can make positive rents on the house, then it's a good investment, you know? So when's the right time to buy? I don't think that's a blanket statement for everybody. That's individual on individual properties, individual situations. And heaven forbid it's a great time for everybody. Guess what? Everybody's going in, and you really need to be on front of it and make sure your pre-approvals are ready, that you understand the neighborhoods that you want to look at. You understand that the dynamics of the kind of property that you're looking at. So when that time comes, you're the first one in and you get that deal.
Well, and it's like you said, I mean, that ability to be proactive instead of reactive. I mean, those who always seem to do well in any kind of market, whether it's up or down, are those that are really on the front end, you know, making proactive decisions for whatever their investments are, or their decisions are. If you were planning on, you know, moving before all of this happened, you might put that on hold, but your plans of moving from Vermont to the Coachella Valley are probably still there as part of your retirement plan. So yeah, you know, you're going to shift it for a few months, but you're still more than likely, you're not going to have this whole situation happen and go, you know, heading somewhere south and getting in the warm weather, I'm probably just going to stay here in Vermont for the rest of my life. No, you're still going to probably make the move, but now is a great time for you to kind of be proactive, put all the decision making together, look at all the different things you're have been considering. You know, and so if you're always reacting, I've, a lot of people, even from 2008, 9, 10, all that, but just even over the last 10 years or so, I watch a lot of folks, you know, family members' decisions that I had made in the past that I really regret. It was letting the market kind of determine things, and then I would respond to it, and I was always behind, or other people are always behind. You're going to lose. It's just the nature of it. So,
yeah, I always tell my kids when they're trying to make a decision of, you know, what classes to take for next year, or, you know, they play soccer and they're always making decisions on what soccer team they want to play for and all those things. I tell them, hey, listen, the best thing you can do is have options. So, you know, when you're looking at what you want to do in life, just have all the options available. That way, when the time is right where you need to make that decision, you have as many options available as possible. So I think now is the time that people are home. They're not, you know, they don't have all the hustle and bustle of their life to stop and focus about what you really want, what your long-term goals, and start putting that plan in place and be proactive and determining, you know, that next step when and if that time comes. But when and if it does, you'll be ready.
Well, it's smart advice. I think, you know, everybody should be really kind of just sitting and putting plans together and thinking about kind of the next steps of what they want to be doing, whether they own a home, whether they're wanting to purchase something, whether they're wanting to refinance, whatever that is. What is the best way for people to, if they have questions, you know, can they reach out to you, find you on online? What's kind of the best way to connect?
Absolutely. You can, you know, phone calls or emails. My personal cell phone number is 951-897-4844. My email is hugh.vanhorn@apmortgage.com. Company I work for is American Pacific Mortgage. We're a big mortgage banker and industry, and strong financially. And you know, we're having conference calls with our CEOs and our leaders daily on what's going on. And you know, they're really transparent and up to date with you know, solving these issues and these hurdles that are put in our way and moving forward. And I'd love to, if anybody has any questions on forbearance or on pre-approvals or on, you know, just, hey, listen, I'm bored at home with no one to talk to. Somebody just wants to call and talk finance and mortgage. Please give me a call. I'm bored.
That's great. Well, I really appreciate your time and your wisdom and insight on all this. I think it'd be great to, because everything is changing so quickly and we're just getting so much new information on a regular basis, it'd be fun to have you back on at some point and kind of give us an update on things. And
absolutely. Jen, thanks for having me.
Of course. She's running around doing some stuff. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to make kind of help cover some of the load a little bit today and give you a call and do a little quick interview. And I appreciate it and wish you the best, man.
Yeah, man. Stay safe.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
All right. Well, it's great to hear from Hugh. What did you think about some of his thoughts there? There's a lot of really great material, it seemed to me.
Oh, that was a great interview. Thank you so much for doing that. Hugh is a great guy, great at what he does, and entertaining to listen to. So it was a great interview. I think that the one thing that stands out the most is, and it kind of can freak people out, but I think it's good information to have, is the fact that a lot of people think that, oh, I don't have to pay my mortgage for 3 months. They'll just tack it on at the end of the life of the mortgage. And that's not necessarily the case. I think a lot of people who are deciding not to pay their mortgage, and then in 3 months when they realize that they not only owe their first month back, you know, their normal monthly amount, they're also going to owe the 3 months previous right away. That's a shock. And that will be a shock to many people, unless they have something in writing from their lender, from the bank, or whoever.
Well, and like he said, even if they were to tack it on over a 12-month period, I mean, you're looking at going from $1,500 to $2,200. I mean, a $700 a month increase is probably more than most people can manage.
For sure. So that's super valuable information. I think if that's the only takeaway, then that was a brilliant takeaway. I think all the listeners need to be aware of that. If you're not going to pay your mortgage for 3 months, you better know when it's coming due. So
one thing he mentioned too, is, you know, the listings that are being taken off the market and things that are giving people a perception, I guess, that there's a big market slowdown. I've seen some things in the news talking about different markets are seeing, you know, 20, 40, and even maybe like 60% drops in listings because everyone's just kind of, you know, pulling into their shell and waiting until this whole thing dies down. What are you seeing in terms of here in the Valley?
I think that overall, I haven't seen the actual data. I would guesstimate that the numbers are a little lower than that, not as high. But in the neighborhoods where I'm a specialist, two of them I'm thinking of specifically where a lot of, they're very large neighborhoods. I mean, thousands of homes. Sun City has over 5,000 and Sun City Shadow Hills has over 3,000 homes. So in those two communities, just because I happen to know the numbers off the top of my head, Sun City, the larger one, is, I think it was 89 homes currently listed on the market this morning. That is about average for this time of year here. So they haven't really seen much of a hit in this, in the number of listings that are currently available. Sun City Shadow Hills is down a little bit. We're at 69 listings currently active. And I would say at this time of year, we should probably be in the high 70s, maybe low 80s. So we're a little low there, lower than normal. A lot of homes are being, a lot of listings are being put, I shouldn't say a lot, but some of the listings that maybe make up the difference are, have been put on hold so that they aren't accruing days on market, but they're going to still plan on selling once this is over, or they're listed as withdrawn from the market currently, but will go back on. So I read an article recently that says that we're going to have a huge boom. Like, after this is over, a lot of homes are going to come on the market and real estate's going to thrive and it's going to be a pretty quick rebound. So that's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm believing for. So
I've wondered about that. I mean, it seems like that would be the case. Again, it's hard to predict these kinds of things, but I know even like within the film industry, you know, because all the productions got put on hold, there's a lot of development and a lot of, there's a huge need for content.
You guys are in pre-production on a lot of stuff.
Well, and there's a lot of, there's concern even with Netflix. You know, they've said that they've got enough content to last, I think, till July or something. But then after that, if this thing carries on, people are going to get really bored watching the same material over and over and over again. So it's, by the time that the veil is lifted and then, okay, you guys can all go back to work and do what you want to do, I think people are going to be hitting it hard to get stuff done. So producers and writers and people that are trying to get projects put together, there's a lot of people that I know right now that are doing everything they can to get stuff kind of in the pipeline, get it polished, get it ready to go. Because once they get the okay and they're like, okay, the financing's here, we're ready to start production. And it's going to just be like a madhouse of people trying to get out there and get a piece of that and make things happen. So to me, it would seem like the real estate market would be very, very similar. The restaurant industry, I'm not quite sure how that one's going to recover because it's such a unique, different kind of service.
If the restaurants who are offering takeout and are staying busy with that can just scrape by, you know, until this is over,
but
I think
if you've
they're
got,
gonna
like,
be fine.
Some custom French restaurant and you know,
fancy steakhouse,
yeah,
or
sit
something.
Down experience. I don't know how you'd be able to provide some kind of service. It's gonna have to be, you have to be really creative. I may see if we can try to connect with some friends that own restaurants like that here in the area and see kind of what they're experiencing and what they're coming up with in terms of how to stay afloat. So maybe we'll bring that into one of our next episodes.
That'd be great.
Yeah, this was good. I think there's a lot of great information in this one, and it was good to connect with Hugh. I'm gonna see if I can reach out and maybe grab a few more interviews like that for people while you're running around just to help out because I'm in quarantine.
you're my quarantine co-host.
I have the time.
And I just love having you here. So.
And my coffee is almost gone, which means it must be time for us to wrap this up so I can.
But thank you so much for helping and for being on, giving me someone to talk to on this podcast since all my other guests are in their homes. You're
my pleasure.
Co-host. I might keep you around. We'll see.
All righty.
Thanks, guys.